Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Economists thought things were getting better. But now we get the numbers. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
I see 194,000. That is real low.
The jobs report misses. Hiring slows.
Maybe it doesn't seem fast enough. I'd like to see it faster, and we're going to make it faster.
Cause for concern or just another bump in the road to recovery? The committee investigating January the 6th now threatening criminal charges against Steve Bannon as the White House blows a hole in the former president's legal strategy. Anti-mask protest erupts.
Will I ever feel safe at my school again?
Parents on both sides of the issue losing patience.
Having my child's education held hostage for an agenda is not right.
And growing furious. Tonight, inside the fight dividing a community. Doses of fentanyl sold on Snapchat. The company cracking down on drug dealers using the platform after multiple children die from taking counterfeit pills. A suicide bombing at a mosque kills dozens. New York City ending gifted and talented student programs. And the first verdict in the college admissions scandal.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good Friday evening. And we got disappointing jobs data today, really proving what experts have warned. The economic recovery from COVID will take time and will face setbacks. We definitely had one today in the major miss from the September jobs report. The U.S. economy added just 194,000 jobs last month. Economists had expected a gain of 500,000. That said, the unemployment rate did drop to 4.8%. With schools reopening and federal unemployment benefits ending, there had been optimism for job growth. Instead, the second month in a row with data well below economists' predictions. It's also the slowest monthly job growth this year, showing that the hole that the pandemic left is filling in much too slowly. Jobs cratered in March and April of last year because of pandemic shutdowns. In the year and a half since then, jobs have slowly trickled in, regaining more than 17 million. But 5 million jobs have not come back, many of them because Americans have been reluctant to rejoin the workforce. Wages did grow. The labor force participation rate dropped. Workers again citing coronavirus fears and a lack of child care. Despite this, President Biden still touted today that the numbers show continued progress.
Today's report has the unemployment rate down to 4.8%, a significant improvement from when I took office, and a sign that our recovery is moving forward, even in the face of a COVID pandemic.
Now, for comparison, after the Great Recession of 2008, the jobless rate didn't get up to 4.8%, or down to it, I guess, for 6.5 years. President Biden and economists are also cautioning, don't take the numbers at face value. They say there are more bright spots when you look under the hood. CNBC's senior economic correspondent Steve Leisman has done just that. The economists don't seem as worried as many people might expect, Steve.
Now, Shep, this is a snapshot that only captured from mid-August to mid-September. There were storm disruptions and Delta concerns were just starting to ease. Yet an upward revision to prior months. Take some of the sting out of this, out of the big miss. July and August revised up by an additional 169,000 jobs. And there are indications in the second half of the September that it's been better. So hope we'll get the kind of strong job growth we need. You know, the hole we have to fill, 5 million jobs that were still down from before the pandemic.
Where are the jobs, Steve?
Well, let me start off with where they're not. We lost 180,000 jobs in public and private education. A lot of this is technical noise created by the pandemic. Fewer teachers and school workers were fired in the summer like normal, probably because of more summer school. So there were fewer to hire come September. We did have good growth in the goods sector, retail, and travel and leisure. Again, those numbers should improve as concern about COVID eases and Americans feel a little more comfortable venturing out again.
What does it all say about unemployment benefits? They expired, and yet.
Yeah, the thing is, we just don't know enough yet, Shep. Initial studies show that states that kept the extended benefits, the opposite of what you think, they had stronger job growth, but that could have been because they had fewer COVID cases. The benefits expired beginning of September. Takes time to find work and to find good work. Just because benefits run out doesn't mean people find a job right away. Plus, there's a lot more to it, like you alluded to earlier, like childcare for many parents.
Yeah. Steve Leisman, have a good weekend. Thank you. Former President Trump will not be able to use executive privilege to block evidence from the January 6th committee. It's a big decision, and it came today from President Biden himself. His White House counsel has instructed the National Archives that it must turn over internal Trump administration records to that investigating committee. In a letter to the archives, the White House counsel writes, "These are unique and extraordinary circumstances. Congress is examining an assault on our Constitution and democratic institutions, provoked and fanned by those sworn to protect them. Executive privilege should not be used to shield from Congress or the public information that reflects a clear and apparent effort to subvert the Constitution itself." Mr. Trump's former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, says he will not comply with the January 6th committee subpoena. And in response, the committee's leaders are threatening to pursue criminal contempt of Congress charges against him. Two former Trump officials, the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and the Pentagon aide, Kash Patel, are engaging with the committee, as they put it, according to the chairman. Former President Trump is vowing to keep fighting against the release of the White House records. In a statement, he wrote, "They are trying once again to use Congress to persecute their political opponents. Their requests are not based on law or reality. It's just a game to these politicians." Let's bring in NBC's justice correspondent, Pete Williams. Are we getting a setup for a legal battle to decide this, Pete?
Oh, without question. And here's why. The courts have never said what authority a former president has to assert executive privilege. What the Supreme Court said in 1977 in a lawsuit involving former President Nixon is that when the incumbent president says the material ought to be turned over, that weakens the former president's claim that it shouldn't be. And of course, there are other things that the Supreme Court has said before in another lawsuit involving Nixon, that the privilege applies only to discussions about the president's official responsibility. So you might well ask, well, does talking about efforts to undercut confidence in the election count as something that's the part of the president's official responsibilities? But because these questions are not 100% clear, yes, of course, they're going to be litigated. The president will undoubtedly go to court and try to block this material from being turned over.
Pete, help us with this. I don't understand Steve Bannon's claim that he's protected by President Trump's assertion of executive privilege.
Well, when his lawyer wrote that letter, President Trump hadn't even asserted executive privilege at that point. I think this is lawyering by the it's sort of an opening gambit by his lawyer. I think his Bannon's claims, of course, are pretty divorced from the president's. He was at one time an advisor, but not during this critical time. And I think he faces some potential exposure here. The committee is saying that if people stiff them on the subpoena, they could vote to find those people in contempt and refer it to the U.S. attorney for potential prosecution. And so I think he'd better be careful. Mm.
Pete Williams, thank you. Federal prosecutors have landed the first conviction tied to that brazen college admission scandal and the investigation dubbed Operation Varsity Blues. A jury today found two wealthy fathers guilty of paying bribes to get their children into top schools. John Wilson, a private equity financier, and Gamal Abdelaziz, a former casino executive. They are the first to have fought the accusations in court. The charges here, Abdelaziz paid $300,000 to get his daughter into the University of Southern California as a basketball recruit. And Wilson paid $1 million to get his twin daughters into Harvard and Stanford, and another $220,000 to get his son into USC. Both men set to be sentenced in February. Meantime, 48 of the 57 people charged in this sprawling scheme have pleaded guilty or agreed to plead guilty. A handful are scheduled to go on trial next year. David Henderson now, civil rights attorney, CBC contributor. David, the longest sentence among those who pleaded guilty in this was just 9 months. A lot of critics have blasted that as a slap on the wrist. But now these two parents have been convicted and they could get up to 20 years. How important is this sentencing going to be?
Shep, I think it's very important, especially for the people who are still waiting to see whether or not they're going to run the risk of going to trial. Mm-hmm. The real crime here is going to trial on bad facts. You can be guilty of sin, and the jury doesn't have to convict you, but to acquit you, you have to be relatable. And these two men simply are not everyday people.
And then there's the coaches, because these weren't athletes. The coaches involved go on trial next month and more parents in January. Were you their attorneys? Would you advise them to reconsider after what we just saw in these convictions?
Absolutely. And this isn't law, Shep. This is common sense. You tell them, look, whether or not you're making a good deal is based on the deal that other people were able to make. Now, the people who went before you, 33 of which were parents, are doing a maximum of 9 months. These two men are facing up to 20 years. They're not likely to get that, but it's still a lot more time than 9 months. So, yes, you should reassess.
This happened really fast. This jury wasn't messing around. Were you surprised by any of this?
No, because it's a hard sell. It's not surprising that people who thought they could buy their way into top schools thought they could buy their way out of prosecution. But when a jury comes back this fast with guilty counts, with guilty verdicts on every single count, that sends a message that you should have been able to foretell before it hit you.
David, have a good weekend. Thank you. An 18-year-old accused of opening fire at a high school in Arlington, Texas 2 days ago is out of jail. Timothy Simpkins' family says he's back home after police let him out on bond yesterday. The release comes as the family of one of the victims says he's fighting for his life. Zacchaeus Selby's family says he's in a medically induced coma now and was set to get two more surgeries today. They say four bullets hit him, one in the chest, the stomach, the arm, and a leg. We're also getting video that police say may show how it all started, and I should warn you here, the video is disturbing. Police say they believe this fight happened just before the shooting. They also say they believe the shooter is the student you see here in the white shirt. The suspect's family says he was being bullied, and they aren't saying that this justifies the shooting or anything like that. Instead, they're saying he was defending himself.
He was robbed. It was reported. It happened not just once. It happened twice. He was scared. He was afraid. There's a video that's all out on social media, and it shows that he was being attacked.
Well, Selby's grandmother told our NBC station she thinks the suspect's family is trying to make it sound like he's the victim. But she says the victim is her grandson. School board meetings, they're the front line now in the war on masks. We're on the ground in a community severely divided over mandates. The ruling by a federal judge that has students on both sides of the argument fired up. Some doctors are now being accused of giving kids bogus waivers to skirt the rules on face coverings. The reports that have officials investigate. Plus, it will be one of the last acts of Mayor de Blasio in New York City. It's a huge change for city schools that has some parents furious.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The fight over mask mandates in schools is showing no signs of stopping. In Florida, the state's Board of Education voting to punish school districts that continue to require masks. School board members in those districts will risk having their salaries withheld. In Benton County, Arkansas, students will have the option to wear masks in schools. A local judge there ruled in favor of some parents who filed a lawsuit over the district's mask mandate. And that's not the case in Knox County, Tennessee, where a federal judge ruled that students will be required to wear masks when in the class. That move reverses a decision of the school board. It previously made masks optional. This ruling is dividing the community. Some parents and students applauding the judge's decision, while others say, look, enough is enough. In Knoxville, here's NBC's Cal Perry.
Shep, it's really that back and forth, the switching of the policies that has so many people upset and has a community divided. We're seeing that pouring out of emotions now at these school board meetings. I was at a meeting on Wednesday where more than 60 people signed up to speak about masks, even though it wasn't on the agenda. One of those speakers talked specifically about what he's going through when he goes to school and refuses to wear his mask. Because of the court ruling, the school is separating out those students. He's calling it isolation. Take a listen.
My greatest concern has been that my right to an education seems to have just gone out the window, apparently. You see, I have sat in the isolation room most of this time with zero instruction and literal no work to provide me on Canvas. Friday will be my last day as a KCS student. You see, I believe that I have a right to a public education just as much as every other student in Knox County. But I do not see anyone standing up for me or these other students.
That is the view of some of the students. Other students really want to wear their masks, and they want everyone around them to be wearing masks. Because this is such an emotional issue, such a divisive issue, we actually now have parents protesting outside of some of the schools. At least one student says she feels threatened by those protests.
They hold up signs like "Good little sheep, wear their mask," and "Save your mask for Halloween." These signs make me feel frustrated because they are comparing us to animals that are simple-minded. This is dividing our school because it is in our face every day, whether you are pro-mask or anti-mask, which is frustrating because I just want to have a peaceful day at school and not have to worry about my safety.
Now, for the protesters' part, they say their protests are absolutely peaceful and they get out of the way of any student who is trying to get to the school. But it just, again, goes to show you what a divisive issue this is, what a difficult time this is for people here in eastern Tennessee. And this is a school district, Shep, with 59,000 students now caught in the middle.
Cal Perry, thank you. There's one thing nearly every American can agree on. Misinformation is a problem. According to a new poll from the Pearson Institute and the Associated Press, 95% of Americans recognize it, and more than 90% say they hold social media responsible for spreading misinformation, obviously. And when it comes to COVID, some are accusing doctors of pushing misinformation. Get this, in Michigan, the Detroit Free Press reports today, the state is looking into allegations that doctors disparaged vaccines and filed bogus waivers for kids to get out of wearing masks in schools. Dave Boucher now, he's the reporter who wrote that story in Detroit. Dave, thanks. You report that in some cases, a doctor in Florida is writing a waiver for kids all the way in Michigan, which is obviously suspect.
That's right. I talked to a private school administrator in Metro Detroit, and he said that five families turned in waivers that didn't give any medical reason for why the students couldn't wear a mask, and they're all signed by the same doctor in Florida. And this was not an isolated incident. This administrator said that there were almost 100 instances of waivers that just popped into his brain that he deemed kind of sketchy.
Dave, beyond flagging these suspicious waivers, can the schools do anything, practically speaking, about it?
This school administrator told me that his hands are essentially tied. He cited the ADA, the federal law that affords rights to people with disabilities. He said that if the school were to say that these students, you know, couldn't have this waiver, that they could be violating their rights. A federal court this week ruled that athletes at Western Michigan University should be allowed to have religious waivers to not get the vaccine. And they ruled that the school's determination that those waivers were invalid violated their free exercise of religion.
Dave, from your reporting, if a doctor's found to be filing a fraudulent waiver or even lying about the vaccine, do those doctors face consequences?
They absolutely do. The process in Michigan is a little bit opaque, but if one of these licensing boards determines that a medical professional has violated the public health code, then their license could be suspended or they could be entirely prevented from practicing in the future.
Well, Dave Boucher from the Detroit Free Press. Dave, thank you. California has a new rule. It's now against the law to remove a condom during sex without permission from the sex partner. That's known as stealthing. The new law denies, or I should say, the new law defines it as sexual battery. And that gives victims the ability to sue for damages. In a study 2 years ago, 12% of women said they'd been a victim of stealthing. And another study found that 10% of men admit they've done it. Similar bills on stealthing have been introduced in New York and Wisconsin, but neither has passed. The assemblywoman who wrote it, who sponsored the bill, Christina Garcia, she said in a statement that, "I urge other states to follow California's direction and make it clear that stealthing is not just immoral, but illegal." Apple introducing plans to build a new regional headquarters, and the location suggests the company is investing very big in a certain kind of content. About 5,000 homeless people live on LA's Skid Row. And tomorrow, like she has for almost 6 years, Shirley Raines will be out there with them, bringing a unique kind of service, because sometimes it's not about just a place to sleep and food to eat.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Here's a staggering figure. Nearly 600,000 Americans are homeless. It's a number that's grown 4 years in a row, according to that Department of Housing and Urban Development. World Homeless Day is Sunday. So we paid a visit to Los Angeles County, where one woman has become a real bright spot in a dark corner of the city known as Skid Row. With her story, here's CNBC's Frank Holland.
How you doing, King?
She may call everyone else King and Queen.
You are the king.
But Shirley Raines is the royalty here on LA's Skid Row, where an estimated 5,000 homeless live, according to the city's Homeless Services Authority.
But Shirley, she means a lot to us on Skid Row. She do the most wonderful thing for me and everybody else.
Coming up on 6 years, her nonprofit called Beauty to the Streets feeds 500 people every Saturday.
Make sure you're in the line. Good morning.
Provides clothing, goodie bags full of everyday essentials, and even hair and makeup services.
She got you looking good, girl. Look at you!
Giving the homeless a chance to look in the mirror and focus on their dignity.
The makeover makes you feel good, it makes you think, and it makes you love yourself.
A calling the mother of six found following a traumatic loss of her own.
My son's not here for me to take care of anymore, but there's other people's kids that are here for me to take care of.
Her 250,000 social media followers fully fund these weekend mornings. Donations that her family on the street says satisfies much more than hunger.
They walk around and talk to us and try to make us feel like we're somebody.
But if anybody attempts to call Raines a hero, her answer is as bold as her lashes.
No, no, no. You're supposed to feed people who are hungry. You're supposed to clothe people who are cold. That's just common courtesy and decency.
And while the overwhelming response to Beauty to the Streets has been a surprise,
I can't believe that the universe would use me for such an amazing assignment.
Raines says she's in it for the long haul.
All right, guys, we'll be back.
For the news, I'm Frank Holland.
Love it, Frank. Thank you. Well, more allegations of abuse in sports, and this time it's U.S. figure skating. And this time, the coach who's accused is a woman. The accusations against her and the drastic action one skater says she took because of it. Counterfeit prescription pills that look completely legit, but contain a deadly dose of fentanyl. The feds say kids are getting them when they show up for sale on social media sites. Now one of the biggest is taking action. That's next as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on a Friday from CNBC. Bad news today for companies trying to dodge taxes. A new global corporate tax rate of 15% agreed upon by more than 130 countries. The goal is to crack down on tax havens. Under these new terms, large corporations will have to pay taxes in any country where they do business, not just where they have a physical presence. The exact formula needs to be worked out for how much companies will owe. And here in the United States, the agreement needs to pass Congress, which these days is never easy. President Biden says the playing field will finally be leveled. The Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen calls it a once-in-a-generation moment. Oil prices are through the roof. That's what's stopping CNBC's On the Money. Crude prices topped $80 a barrel today, the highest level in 7 years. As the pandemic loosens its grip, demand has increased. At the same time, supplies are limited because OPEC has decided not to increase production. That sent the cost of oil up 60% in the United States since the beginning of this year. That means gas is going up, too. The national average hit $3.26 a gallon today, more than a dollar higher than this same time last year. Apple moving into Hollywood. The company building a new regional headquarters with more than 500,000 square feet of space for teams working on Apple TV+, Apple Music, and artificial intelligence. It's a sign that the company will continue to invest in its content, like its new hit show, Ted Lasso. And who'd pay $1 million for one pair of sneakers? Sotheby's believes they'll get at least that at auction for this first pair of Nike Airships that Michael Jordan wore in a game his rookie year with the Bulls back in 1984. Chicago played Denver that night, and Michael Jordan gave the pair of red and white sneaks to a Nuggets ball boy. The auction, October 24th at a Vegas casino. On Wall Street, all red, but not too bad. The Dow down 9, S&P down 8, the NASDAQ down 74. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news.
Another scandal rocks the sports world. An Olympic skating coach under investigation after accusations of abuse. The Boston Marathon, COVID canceled last year. Now, thousands of runners descend on the city for Marathon Monday. But for one athlete, it's much more than just a race to the finish line. And deadly doses of fentanyl being sold to kids on Snapchat.
The DEA warning that drug dealers are selling fake prescriptions to kids on social media platforms. Officials say children are buying counterfeit pills that look like Percocet, OxyContin, or Xanax, but that actually contain a deadly dose of fentanyl. It's a powerful synthetic opioid that, according to the CDC, killed nearly 60,000 people just last year. Many social media platforms announced plans to crack down on sales of the illicit drug. This week, Snapchat posted tools to educate kids about the harmful effects of prescription drugs. But for some devastated parents, it's too little too late. Here's CNBC's Valerie Castro.
We need them to take action, and we need them to take it today.
Following numerous overdoses and protests to take action, Snapchat and its parent company Snap say changes are in the works to make the platform safer. Heartbreaking stories of children dying after unknowingly buying fentanyl-laced drugs through dealers on the app led to the outcry for reform.
Our son ordered drugs off of a colorful menu. The words on that menu would have alerted us if we had had parent monitoring software allowed on Snapchat.
That sort of parent monitoring software is not one of the changes, but the company says it's made significant operational improvements over the past year to eradicate drug sales from our platform. Those improvements, like proactive detection, include artificial intelligence systems that detect and filter out drug-related content and help identify drug dealers who are then removed from the platform. A new in-app portal called Heads Up displays educational information when someone searches for drug-related keywords. Substance abuse and mental health resources are also displayed, along with content to raise awareness about the dangers of fentanyl-laced counterfeit pills. A third-party monitoring system called S3 is another tool, searching the internet for social media posts that reference Snapchat, a possible advertising technique used by drug dealers.
Many parents say they still want that parent monitoring software, something to alert them to suspicious activity. The platform says it is working on new family safety tools to provide more ways for parents to partner together with their teenagers to stay safe on Snapchat. Chip.
Valerie, thank you. ISIS-K claiming responsibility for a devastating suicide bombing that killed dozens of worshippers inside a mosque in Kabul. Another warning here, the video is graphic and disturbing. A Taliban official says the blast killed at least 43 people, wounded more than 140 more. Happened during Friday noon prayer, when mosques are typically quite crowded. The explosion just days after a deadly bombing outside a different mosque, also in Kabul. This is ISIS-K's deadliest attack inside Afghanistan since that suicide bomber killed 13 U.S. troops and some 170 civilians during the U.S. evacuation back in August. The White House has faced harsh criticism for deporting thousands of Haitian migrants back to Haiti, a country in extreme turmoil. In recent months, Haiti's endured the assassination of its president and a devastating earthquake. Poverty is widespread. Food is hard to find. NBC's Jacob Soboroff went to Haiti to witness the dire situation on the ground that's driving Haitians to seek refuge in the United States.
Across Haiti's capital city, a landscape of despair, one that extends far beyond Port-au-Prince.
We're on our way to Lakai, the area that was devastated by the recent earthquake here. We're going to board a plane operated by the World Food Program. They're doing food and cash distributions. This is it.
We flew with Pierre Honorat, the organization's country director in Haiti. When we arrived, we drove towards a remote commune called Aquin, an area that faced extreme poverty even before the quake due to a lack of jobs in the area.
Here you have the most vulnerable among very vulnerable people. And you need to properly identify who they are.
They might be starving, literally.
Exactly.
This is one of their food distribution sites. Pierre's leading us into it right now.
We met several women waiting in line, including the single mom of four kids.
Can you tell me what life is like here?
This is not a great place.
Do you know anybody who's left, anybody who's leaving Haiti?
Yes, there are a lot of people leaving.
Hunger isn't the only life-threatening reality for Haitians.
Some areas are really like war zone. You don't go there anymore.
It's a war zone.
It's really a war zone.
We flew back to Port-au-Prince on a UN chopper, now used to avoid violence in addition to delivering aid. On the city's streets, you understand why.
We're making our way through Port-au-Prince, and much of the city right now is controlled by violent gangs. We're heading to a clinic run by Doctors Without Borders. They say they're seeing an uptick in violence.
It's trauma hospital.
Half of the patients who arrive here have life-threatening gunshot wounds, often from high-power firearms.
The patient that's in this bed, inside this room right now, is a victim of gun violence.
Haitian trauma surgeon Xavier Garnizan tends to the neediest patients.
How many of the people that you meet as patients do you think would consider leaving Haiti for another country, including the United States?
Maybe 90%.
90%? Why so high?
Violence, poverty.
And those are the patients you treat every day?
Yeah.
Victims of gun violence?
Yeah.
Stabbings?
With
car accidents because they have to move from one place to another due to violence in their community?
Mm-hmm.
And even you as a doctor, is it fair to say that you might think about one day leaving Haiti because of the situation here?
Yes, I do, because at the end, I got dreams too. I want a better life too. I don't need to be rich. I don't need that. But I need to have enough to feed my family.
There's enormous pressure for you as well.
Yeah.
Shep, as Dr. Karnizan continues that absolutely heroic work, the U.S. says the number of Haitians that our Coast Guard has stopped trying to leave by boat has tripled over just the last year, hundreds in the last weeks alone. It's a situation the Biden administration says they are committed to addressing through what they call Haitian-led solutions. Shep?
Jacob, thank you. More allegations of abuse rocking the sports world tonight. This time, it's figure skating. The U.S. Center for Safe Sport temporarily restricting an Olympic pairs coach amid accusations of abuse. USA Today reports Dahlia Sappenfield is barred now from contacting a dozen skaters. She's also not allowed to coach other athletes without another adult present, as Safe Sport investigates. One of the athletes she used to coach spoke to USA Today. Tara Kane told the reporter she eventually left the sport because of the abuse she suffered under Sappenfield. Kane is accusing her of constant verbal abuse, including sexual comments. A warning now, her story includes descriptions of self-harm. She says one night her coach called her and told her that her career would end because of the kind of person she was, not because of her skill. She says that led her to cut her wrist and that bleeding was so bad that she went to a skating partner's room for help. She says she was so afraid the coach would find out about that she and her partner superglued her skin back together. Kane told USA Today, "In my head, I thought I was going to die, but I was afraid to go to the hospital because I didn't want Delilah, the coach, to know about any of this." We reached out to Delilah Sappenfield. She said she has no comment at this time, and the U.S. Center for Safe Sport says it doesn't comment at all on ongoing investigations. A controversial education plan is headed now for a major overhaul. why the mayor of New York City says the whole thing was a mistake from the very beginning. Moose in Maine. They're dealing with a climate change problem. Not necessarily warmer temperatures or rising water. Something much smaller and much more deadly. And just in to CNBC, an update from the Coast Guard on what caused that oil spill off the coast of Southern California. We're getting it together now, and we'll have it for you next. Brand new information out tonight about that oil spill off the Southern California coast. We've just learned, as it turns out, authorities believe an anchor did strike that pipeline, but not recently. That's according to Coast Guard officials who say it's likely the impact actually happened several months ago, up to a year ago. Earlier this week, officials revealed that the pipeline had a 13-inch split in it, that's new, and had moved 100 feet from its position on the seafloor. Investigators still haven't identified which ship might be to blame. Officials say about 131,000 gallons of oil leaked out. The spill has closed beaches and shut down fisheries. There's concern a storm tonight could push more of that oil onto shore. A monumental change today in the largest school district in America. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio announcing a plan to phase out the Gifted and Talented program in the public schools. The controversial move is one of de Blasio's last as mayor. It works to eliminate what critics say is a two-tier education system, segregating children by both wealth and race. Here's CNBC's Bertha Coombs.
How spiders look, I want you to highlight.
New York City's Gifted and Talented program is unusual for most school systems. It's based on a pre-kindergarten test. Mayor Bill de Blasio announcing on the Brian Lehrer radio show the system will be phased out.
We're going to be ending something that I think was a mistake all along, a single test for four-year-olds that determines so much of their future.
Critics say by relying on one early childhood test, the program shut out too many students of color. 75% of kids enrolled are white or Asian, but they make up just a quarter of the system's 1 million school children.
Using that one measure to sort students and then having them, you know, be on these separate trajectories seemed really unfair. It was leading to more segregation and disproportionately harming Black and Latinx students in the city.
The program would continue for current students, but new classes of gifted kids would be kept in the mix with their classmates with some extra attention, like special ed programs. New York Congresswoman Grace Meng urged the city to reconsider. Phasing out this program is a mistake, she said, adding G&T seats should be expanded to all communities throughout New York City and the testing process improved. Some parents say, scrap it all.
Let's revisit whether or not there needs to be a distinction at all, as opposed to raising up the overall level of curriculum pointed at all kids.
With de Blasio's term ending in December, it will be up to a new mayor to decide whether to proceed. A spokesman for leading mayoral candidate Eric Adams says he will assess the plan and, if elected, reserves the right to implement policies based on the needs of students and parents. For the news, I'm Bertha Coombs.
Google Flights is going green. You'll now be able to check the level of carbon emissions in your flight searches. For example, on a nonstop flight from New York to L.A., Google estimates on an Airbus 321 up to 641 kilograms of CO2 are emitted into the atmosphere during that 6 or so hour flight. And if you click on the emissions estimate there on the search, you can see what's typical for whatever route you're taking. Some are higher, some average, some lower. Google says the estimates are based on data from the European Environmental Agency and aircraft manufacturers. In addition, Google is including fuel-efficient routes on maps and options for greener Nest thermostat settings. Climate change is disrupting the balance of life in ways you might not expect. For one, the moose population in Maine, it's dropping. And the experts say it's related to climate change, certainly, but not in the way we might think. Because in this case, it's not happening or impacting the habitat of the moose. Instead, it's the change in temperature is allowing one of its mortal enemies to thrive. Here's NBC's Kerry Sanders.
Majestic, magnificent, but here in Maine, moose are in peril.
But we're getting October, November weather where we're getting 70 degrees into the 80s. And every day it's warm out. I know what's going on in the woods today.
What's going on is climate change. Biologists in Maine say winters are now 2 weeks shorter than they once were. That gives the blood-sucking ticks that only target moose 14 extra days to latch onto them in numbers never before seen.
Now you got 60,000 ticks taking blood on you at a time of year where you're trying to make it through with your fat reserves.
So they're weakened?
So they're weakened, they're anemic.
Those thousands of ticks are drawing an astonishing 15 gallons of blood from the moose every 2 weeks, close to half of a moose's total blood supply. Increasingly, moose, especially the calves, are dying. We join state biologists on an aerial survey of Maine's northern moose territory.
Off we go. And we're airborne.
In this sparsely populated region, there are three moose for every resident.
There's a moose down there.
There's one there.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty tough to see it.
2 decades ago, there were 100,000 moose in Maine. Now it's estimated there are only 60,000. Ticks to moose are like mosquitoes to humans.
You imagine yourself out in the woods, and there's mosquitoes everywhere. You don't have any bug repellent, and your hands are tied behind your back. There's no way to escape those insects.
That sounds very painful, and in this case, it can be deadly.
Absolutely.
Moose tours are big business, but spotting a moose, which is never easy, has become even more difficult.
You don't make appointments with nature.
So you feel lucky today?
Yes.
Moose callers like veteran master guide Roger Lambert mimic a female moose.
That's a cow.
That's a cow. So you're trying to call the male out.
Well, absolutely.
And they play act because a moose's eyesight is so poor. A comical routine that at times draws moose out of the woods.
But it goes quick. See, and you do a little nasal, you know, little stuff.
Are you squeezing your nose?
A little bit, yeah, if you need to. Damn good, Gary. That's damn good.
Really?
You didn't even start out with that.
I learned from the best. And bingo, a moose. Those regal antlers up to 5 feet wide.
Mother Nature in all her glory takes your breath away.
In what may sound counterintuitive, to save the moose, state biologists say some must be sacrificed to hunters. The theory, with fewer moose, the ticks will die. It's believed then a healthy moose population can rebuild. For the news, I'm Kerry Sanders.
Damn good, Kerry. Daniel Craig's final mission as 007 shaping up to be a real success. Ticket sales at last night's screenings brought in $6.3 million. Variety reports it's the best open for any Bond movie yet. Analysts say they expect it'll rake in $100 million this weekend. Fandango reports hundreds of showtimes for the film are already sold out, and theater owners are adding more to meet the demand. This is the fifth movie with Craig slinging around a license to kill as James Bond. No word yet on who's going to fill that spy's fancy shoes next. Looking for something to do this weekend? How about a peek at one of the spookiest attractions in all the Midwest? It's called the Ghost Ship. And for the first time since 2017, it's back open for any brave souls willing to step on board. There, the ghosts come out all year, not just at Halloween. Local reporting now from NBC affiliate KBJR6 in Duluth, Minnesota, and their reporter, Quinn Gorham.
I'm afraid every day on here, for sure.
Even the event's staff is scared of Duluth's haunted ship, but they say it's an event that's become an iconic part of October in Duluth.
It's become a tradition for many people. You know, they're very excited because it's been gone a few years to come back to the haunt.
Steve Rankela with the deck is one of the masterminds behind the terrifying tour. He says a lot of work goes into building each year's haunted house.
We're planning for this next year's haunt already. We've gone through exactly what we've done, how we prepared the room, and our goal is to actually scare everyone we can.
But Halloween isn't the only time the ship is haunted. Workers say the ship is spooky all year round.
We do have a certification from the Duluth Paranormal Society saying that we are a haunted site. So I think it probably adds a little something to it.
But Lucy Amundsen, communications director at the DEC, says the ship is more than just a spooky attraction.
We're just hoping to have that sense of community that we've always had before. There are typically long lines, and there's a lot of visiting in those lines. People literally and figuratively get cold feet in those lines.
And aside from the huge crowds and the fun frights, the haunted ship's ultimate mission is clear.
Our goal is to scare the heck out of you.
For the news, I'm Quinn Gorham.
Quinn, thanks. Two women, one goal. Run the Boston Marathon. Come Monday, only one of them will be lacing up her sneakers. CNBC's Perry Russum with their story next. And some unexpected action at the Seahawks game. Did you see this? The team's beloved mascot takes a detour to hang out with one lucky fan. A federal magistrate in Nevada today recommended a civil rape case against soccer star Cristiano Ronaldo be dismissed. Former teacher and model Catherine Mayorga accused Ronaldo of sexually assaulting her at a Vegas hotel room 12 years ago. Ronaldo denies the allegations and says their relationship was consensual. Prosecutors dropped the criminal case against him 2 years ago after they said they couldn't prove the allegations. Mayorga also alleges Ronaldo and his team pressured her into signing a settlement and non-disclosure agreement. She says she got $375,000. The judge recommended dismissing the case because Mayorga's lawyers based part of her lawsuit on leaked documents, which contained confidential conversations between Ronaldo and his lawyers. Mayorga has less than 2 weeks to object to the ruling. Her legal team has not responded to NBC News requests for comment. For the first time since the pandemic hit, runners will toe the line for the Boston Marathon on the actual course. The race from Hopkinton to Boston on Monday. It usually happens in April, but COVID. Organizers say they're planning for 20,000 runners to show up at the starting line. That's about 20% fewer than a normal year, but so much better. A couple thousand of those runners will be doing it for charity. CBC's Perry Russum has the story of a woman who can't wait to cross the finish line, not for herself, but for somebody else.
Growing up just north of Boston, Delmas Orkiza was one of the fastest around.
Yes, I was very proud. I was a track star in high school.
Running the Boston Marathon was the dream, but Delmas was running with a secret.
Mostly in high school, people didn't really know I had cystic fibrosis because I didn't want to be known as the sick girl going around.
And I'll switch it over to my Tovina.
Cystic fibrosis is a progressive disease. Her lung function declines as she gets older. Right now, her lung function is at 48%.
Their struggle is very internal.
Jessica Garten was her physical therapist for years and remembers a conversation from 2018.
She told me that her goal was to run it in 2020. So I said, you know what? If you do this, you know, if we work on this and if you prioritize your health and train, I will run it with you.
For a year and a half, Delmas trained, but the 2020 race was delayed and then went virtual. The doctor said COVID was too much of a risk.
I was just really hurt because I worked so hard.
The cruelty of CF is it's genetic. Alex is her big brother.
Seeing him makes me want to be better, do better, and really try and make a difference so that we can both have the future that we deserve. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You weren't running just for yourself. You were running for him.
Yes. Yes. For him and all the other CFers like us.
At that point, I was like, I'm no longer running with you. I'm going to run for you.
It's a promise Jessica kept, finishing the virtual marathon in 2020. And it's a promise she keeps again on Monday.
I felt like I asked my patients with cystic fibrosis to dig deep, to do a little bit more. And I felt like I needed to embody that.
It's just amazing to see that even though I'm not on the course, that my story and, you know, in a way, my triumph is going to be there.
Delmas will be at mile marker 18 on Monday, cheering Jess on. She has to be away from the large crowds here at the finish line because of her health. Together, they have raised thousands of dollars for CF research. Shep.
Perry, thanks. Winners all. But not the Seahawks. They lost to the Rams yesterday, 26-17. But their mascot scored his own touchdown right into the end zone. That's Tamia, the Seahawks live hawk. He flies out of the tunnel before every game. And this time, Tamia took a bit of a detour, diving into the ground and landing on a fan. And he handled it like a champ. This isn't that hawk's first offense either. He did the same thing back in 2014 when the Seahawks faced the Giants. The hawk has been flying out of the tunnel at Seahawks games for 17 years. He's been to two Super Bowls, even has his own Twitter account. That hawk isn't the only thing that's soaring. According to new data from Nielsen, the NFL is averaging more than 17 million television and digital viewers so far this season, and that is a 20% increase over the same time last year. League officials and media execs say the return of the fans is helping, and the games have been pretty exciting, which attracts more eyeballs. 45 seconds on a race to the finish, a disappointing September jobs report. The U.S. economy added only 194,000 jobs last month. Economists had predicted it would be around 500,000. Former President Trump cannot use executive privilege to block White House records from the January 6th committee. That's the decision from President Biden. And now, you know the news. Of this Friday, October the 8th, 2021, I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The News on CNBC. And listen to The News podcast on Apple, Spotify, and your favorite podcast platform. And Carrie, damn good job, Carrie. Damn good. Moose. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.